Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Philly Sports Passion Podcast. I'm your host, Eric DeCinto, and here today is my co-host, Kyle Lutz. How are you,
Kyle? I'm good, Eric. It's good to be back.
Yeah. It was a busy day. Did you have a good Memorial Day?
Yeah, it was good. It was very laid back, and you know, it was a good day off for everybody, so a lot of people enjoyed it. So, yeah, it was I enjoyed myself.
Yeah, it was a very nice day out. Very nice day to relax and just chill. Hopefully, the rest of the week is not so hot, but not so cold. We're back to that warm weather. Hopefully, you know. So
yeah, absolutely.
Do you want to start with the NBA Finals, where the Golden State Warriors are going to be looking for their third straight title, and the Toronto Raptors beat the Milwaukee Bucks 4-2 after being down 2-0? Were you surprised Raptors won?
Raptors are making their first finals appearance. You know, a lot of people are anticipating that Kawhi, even if the Raptors somehow win a couple games, I doubt they'll win the series. A lot of people are saying even if Toronto wins a couple games and puts up a decent fight versus Golden State from Thursday on, that Kawhi won't return to Toronto in the free agency market. A lot of people are anticipating that he goes out west to L.A. to join LeBron with the Lake Show. That should be interesting. I know that people were saying he wants to secure a long-term deal. You know, Los Angeles didn't make the playoffs this year, but he'll be in a warm environment and a team that's somewhat on the rebuild. So that'll be an interesting storyline where, you know, will Kawhi be distracted in the finals by, you know, his potential departure in free agency this offseason. But I see Golden State making this an easy series. Toronto has a lot of talent. They're one of the better defensive-minded teams, especially in the East. Obviously, Milwaukee was favored, but, you know, Milwaukee really, I don't think they have as much depth that Toronto has. And Toronto has, you know, both teams had a top five star, but I think Toronto was just a little bit more polished, and I think that's why they were able to succeed versus Milwaukee, who just didn't seem like they had their footing. But obviously Golden State has been there. You know, they won multiple championships both with and without Kevin Durant. You know, we're not sure if he's going to, how many games he's going to play, but so it should be interesting. Do we know if he's going to playing game one or not? I've heard numerous stories, but
he's out for game one already.
They already confirmed that he's not going to play at all in game one. They said that.
Yeah, and DeMarcus Cousins is officially questionable. And I didn't realize the Raptors had home court.
Because both teams had around, I think Golden State had 57 wins and Toronto might have had 58 wins because Milwaukee had the best record and they had like one more win than Toronto did. So, you know, they were both, you know, neck and neck fighting for, you know, I don't think the NBA has the awards the team for the best record. I know the NHL has the President's Trophy.
President's
but I'm looking at it now, 57 wins Golden State, 58 for Toronto. But if Toronto really wants to get an upper edge in this series, it's going to be in those first two home games, because obviously they don't have the neither team really has a momentum thing. Neither team, you know, came into the postseason as a team that was, you know, vying for a postseason spot. It wasn't like they had to fight to get there. Both teams were upper echelon teams. So I don't think there was a real clear-cut strength for either team in that. I just think the postseason experience will be an advantage for Golden State. It's whether or not Toronto can take advantage of Golden State's injuries and the home court. If Golden State wins those first two games, I seriously doubt Toronto will steal, you know, one games, let alone, you know, anything lesser, you know, in Toronto. I doubt they'll sweep in Toronto, let alone win, you know, multiple games in Golden State if they happen to win one in Toronto. So I don't think this will be a stretched out series.
Yeah, I agree. I see Golden State winning in five at best. But Toronto has home court, so they can steal one at home. You never know. But Golden State has...
Yeah, the interesting thing is Golden State has some injuries. Toronto has really, you know, they're one of the better defensive teams. They can put up points. For what it's worth, as of now, Toronto is favored by 1 point coming into Thursday's game one, which is at 9 on ABC. And like you mentioned, it's in Toronto, and the over-under is 215. Do you see it being a high-scoring series, like both teams scoring over 100 points each game, or do you see it being like 95-94, assuming it's going to be close? What do you see as far as the scores?
I think that game one will be defensive game, because Golden State hasn't played for 10 days. They haven't played since our last show last Monday when they beat Portland Trail Blazers. So come Thursday, it will be 10 days off for them, which they could be
They've had a lot of time to rest, and it's interesting that Durant's still going to be out, but I don't think that's going to be a problem for the depth that Golden State has. You know, obviously you have a talented roster, you have a deep roster, you have a shooting roster, a team that can just spread the floor, basically. I mean, you have Draymond, who's, you know, heart and soul of the team, arguably, and Steph, who's the MVP. You know, Clay is kind of the unsung hero. And you have some other pieces around that, despite the loss of two of their guys in the lineup. So I kind of agree with you. I don't see it going more than five games. I think Toronto at home could steal a game. Well, I guess if they're at home, I don't know if they'll be stealing a game, but I guess more or less, I think Toronto could stretch this series, but I don't see it being a sweep. I don't see it going, you know, any longer than four or five games, so it should be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But did you want to mention, before we forget, the loss today of a couple of sports guys, a couple of sports legends of multiple sports. Did you want to focus on that real quick?
Yeah. Today we lost Boston Red Sox legend Bill Buckner. He died at the age of 69. And over the weekend, legendary quarterback for the Packers, Bart Starr, also died. So, two losses this weekend for sports world for Green Bay Packers and the Boston Red Sox. I mean, Bill Buckner played for several other teams. I think he played for the Dodgers too. So, I'm going to do a little moment of silence for those two and for Memorial Day.
Yeah, Bill Buckner played for, he started his career with the Dodgers, was an integral part of some of those Red Sox teams, the 86 team that lost to the Mets. Obviously, he had that infamous play. I think it was game six versus, was it Mookie Wilson of the Red Sox?
Yeah.
I mean, of the Mets that hit the ground ball down the line at first base. And, Buckner was kind of towards the end of his career. He ended up playing a little bit more than 5 years after that, but he was no spring chicken. He was in his mid-30s at that point and should have been a defensive replacement. And unfortunately, the disease that he died and succumbed to, he was only 69 when he died today, but the disease that he died to was a form of dementia called Lewy body dementia, which is the same progressive degenerative brain disease that actor Robin Williams suffered with before his suicide. So, reportedly by ESPN, Buckner was surrounded by family members at his, at his deathbed before he died. So, unfortunately, may he rest in peace. Bart Starr, Super Bowl MVP, I believe, of the first two Super Bowls for the Packers, Pro Football Hall of Fame inductee, one of the first memorable NFL quarterbacks back in the day, and the guy that, it would be pretty long too, 85 years, a Midwest guy, born and raised and died in Alabama, and a 17th round pick too. Played his entire career for the Packers, 15 years. After he retired in 71, he came on as a coach for the Packers in 72 by Dan Devine, who succeeded, I believe, Vince Lombardi as Packers head coach after the former retired after winning several Super Bowls. And then Starr was the quarterback's coach under Devine. And I believe Dan Devine also coached Rudy Rudiger, so that's kind of interesting. And Bart Starr was also the head coach for almost a decade, from 75 to 83, of the Packers. So he was obviously an integral part of the team behind center there on the first two Super Bowl winning teams. Both times he won the Super Bowl, he was the MVP. He was a five-time champion. Also played in teams that lost in the championship game, and including prior to 2 years ago, the 1960 NFL championship was the last time the Eagles won the championship versus him. And then he went on and won the 61 and 62 championship, the 65 through 67, and then the first two Super Bowls. So do you have any thoughts on Bart Starr, on his legacy? He was also in the Packers Hall of Fame. His number 15 Packers jersey is retired. 1960s NFL All-Decade Team. So he was also an MVP too. So do you have any thoughts on him as a player, aside from his passing today?
He was obviously a great quarterback, one of the best of all time, probably. Would you have him in your top 5 or top 10 all time? I think I would. About top 8?
I don't know if I wouldn't have him top 5. He would be around top 10. It's difficult to – the problem with that is some of the guys that you would compare him to, I think he's definitely deserving of top 10 conversation just because of his – legacy. Obviously, he's, in the record books, the first two Super Bowl winning quarterback, the first two Super Bowl MVP, that's obviously something you can't take away from him. And obviously he went on to be a coach. So, he actually made the playoffs in 82 and lost to the Cowboys in the playoffs as Packers head coach. And like I mentioned, was also a quarterback's coach. But as a player, it's difficult to compare eras is the problem because, obviously you have to compare them with guys like Manning, Brady, Rodgers, Breeze, Young, Montana, those types of guys. Obviously some of those guys played in the late 80s, early 90s, mid-90s, that type of thing, and the rest of the guys played in our era nowadays. So it's difficult to compare that, but talent-wise, he looking at old footage, he was definitely the best at his time. And you can compare him with the likes of the, guys like Johnny Unitas, who, was just a total gunslinger, but was extremely talented and was ahead of his time. That's kind of how I look at Bart Starr, who actually died of a stroke. But like I mentioned, he was 85 and lived a very fulfilling, long life. So while I don't obviously look for his death, 85 years is pretty good. And obviously he accomplished a lot as a player, as a coach, and beyond that. So we obviously, reach out to the families and sympathize with them for both players, Buckner and Starr.
Exactly. May they rest in peace.
Absolutely.
Do you want to move on to the NHL playoffs? NHL Stanley Cup? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we had the game one starting today.
Yep, and the Boston Bruins beat the St. Louis Blues 4-2 after being down 2-0. I was back and forth with the game. I was watching some baseball too. And the Bruins, it was a good game. It was Blues had scored the first goal, I saw that. And then they went up 2-0. And then the Bruins scored the next three goals. And then I think the fourth goal was an empty netter. I missed that, but I believe it was an empty netter. Game two will be when? Game two is Wednesday night at 8 o'clock on NBCSN, which is interesting because today was on NBC, so it's like we'll be on NBC again, but game two will be on Wednesday, and then the series moves to St. Louis on Saturday at 8 o'clock, and then Game 4 is on this Monday, and if necessary, Game 5 and 6 and 7 after that.
Yeah, so you saw today's game. Obviously, Bruins took that – St. Louis took that early lead, and usually St. Louis, the last couple of years, they've kind of it's kind of been I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, St. Louis, this is their first time in the Stanley Cup, I believe. Since 1959. went to the Stanley Cup. And this is their first appearance in the Stanley Cup. That's the St. Louis Blues. They haven't had much playoff success. They've always gotten to the playoffs and just couldn't get past that hump of making it to the Stanley Cup, but they finally got to it this year. And the Blues reached the Stanley Cup Finals in each of the first three seasons. The Blues were originally the Blues franchise into the Stanley Cup in 1968 and 1969. They were swept by Montreal in 1968 and then Boston Bruins, ironically, in 1970. I don't think that was when they were the St. Louis Blues. Kyle, are you still there? I'm calling up for a little bit. He'll be right back. There were some technical difficulties. I'm just going to end the show right now. Thanks for listening. And just follow us on Twitter at PhillySP Podcast. Never mind. Kyle is back. Hello, Kyle. Again.
Yep.
Are you okay?
Yep.
Okay. Kyle is back, and we were discussing about the St. Louis Blues being the Stanley Cup for the first time.
Talking about the Stanley Cup?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Blues, their first time in the Cup Finals, I believe, since 1970, I think.
Yeah. Ironically,
they were in the Cup Finals in the 3 years in a row in the late 70s, or late 60s, early 70s. I think 68 or 70. They were in the finals all three times and lost. Yeah. Yeah, so they really haven't had a prolonged amount of time of years of success in a while since they had guys like Chris Pronger. So the Bruins are overdue for a cup, and I think they have the talent on paper. I think they have the grit, but the problem is, they're facing a really stacked team, so it's kind of a tall order.
I think the last time the Blues were in the Cup, according to Wikipedia, they played the Boston Bruins in 1970. And they were, it says, the Blues missed the Stanley Cup and we took their first three seasons. So they were swept first by Montreal in 1968 and 69, and then by the Boston Bruins. So, yeah, they haven't had so much success in the Stanley Cup. They haven't won a game in the Stanley Cup. So tonight would have been their first day if they had held on to the lead. But let's see on how the series goes. You have any predictions on who's going to win?
Yeah, I think the Bruins will win. Series could probably go five games. Boston won a title pretty recently ago. I know it was, you know, almost a decade ago, but 8 years ago, the year after they lost that infamous seven-game series to the Flyers after being up three games to nothing, that following year, the 2011 playoffs, they won the Cup over Vancouver in seven games after sweeping the Flyers. I think the Bruins still have, you know, like a similar roster, a very talented goalie in that. You know, this year it's a little bit different because they're kind of platooning their goalies with Rask and Halak. I'm not sure if Rask was injured as to why Halak played 40 games or if it was just a coach's decision, but and then you have, you know, some talented guys up front. When you talk about Brad Marchand, who has playoff experience, David Pastrnak, Patrice Bergeron, who's a, you know, he's been a star in this league for a while. David Krejci, who was kind of a unsung hero, and then you have some other guys thrown into the mix. You know, guys with 40, 50 points that can chip in. So, you know, they have a talented first couple of lines, you know, decent defense, nothing spectacular, but their first couple of lines are respectable, and the goalies are probably arguably the best duo of goalies in the NHL, and Rask and Halak, and, you know, Halak's been around the block, and I believe Rask has won a cup, so they're both very serviceable. And Rask has also been an all-star and a Vezina guy in the past. So they're both very serviceable guys for the Bruins in this year's playoffs. So I wouldn't be surprised if they make a deep run in the Cup playoffs for Boston.
Yeah. They still have their captain, Chara. He's been there forever. How long he's been there? He's been there for at least over 15 years, right?
Yeah, because he was with he's been with multiple teams. He was drafted by the Isles, then he went to Ottawa, then he's been with the Bruins for 12 years, one of those years, 2009, he won the Norris Trophy for best defenseman, and he's regularly been a top in Norris Trophy voting. So he's been a huge asset on the blue line for Boston. This year he suffered through some injuries, but he's one of the bigger guys in the league, 250 pounds, nearly 7 foot, but he's over 40 years old, so he's getting up there in age. So I expect him to be, you know, a huge storyline and a guy that logs a ton of minutes. And this year's playoffs, he's logged just over 21 minutes. And he's a guy that can go 22, 23 minutes, 24 if need be, when you really need him in a make-or-break game or, in a clincher or those types of scenarios. So I expect him to be one of the X factor for Boston if they want to, be successful in this year's finals.
Do you think he would retire after this if they win the Stanley Cup? Or do you think he still has some years left in him?
Well, I would have to look at his Look at his contract. If he has a year left and he wants to retire, and he'd have to buy them out unless he has a clause in his contract. Some players, as you know, either have an opt-out or they have an option to accept an offer. But he has a lot of power, being that he's been in the league for 20 years, won a cup with Boston, won a Norris with Boston, and is a perennial NHL Hall of Fame type of guy. Once he retires, I think he's a guy that could be, you know, a shoo-in in his first couple of years of eligibility when he decides to retire and go that route, because he's regularly been one of the better defensive-minded players of the league, and a guy that just gives it his all ever since he's been around. As much as I'm not a huge fan of his, I respect his game. So it should be an interesting finals coming up. I think Boston wins it. I think Boston's experience and defense will win them this cup. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's a sweep by Boston. But I expect it to go probably five games with St. Louis holding on to a couple close wins by Boston, but nonetheless, it being a 4-1 series win in the finals for Boston. So, what are your thoughts on the upcoming series and Chara's influence and that type of stuff?
I think the Bruins are going to win in six, and I think Chara has been one of the staples of the league. Do you agree with that? He's one of the big names
absolutely.
In the league.
Yeah, I do think he's been a guy that you always have to look out for. He strikes fear in opponents. He's a good two-way defenseman. Regularly he can score around 15, 16 goals. Obviously, he gives you a good forecheck and decent amount of speed, considering his size and his age. So, Boston has the upper hand in that respect, and they have they're in the upper echelon in NHL teams with players with a fair amount of playoff experience. So, they also have that in their corner to play that at their advantage. So. I see them using their – I see them kind of breaking it down and making it a simple game and not oversimplifying things. So that's why I think, Boston gets their success from. It's just able to simplify plays and use their experience and strength to kind of wear down their opposition to their strength and bring them down. So it's all about – what can St. Louis do to kind of lead on the forecheck and kind of, defeat that mindset and to kind of alter some of the tactics that the Bruins employ on both defense and offense. So it should be pretty interesting, game one coming up. I'm sorry, game two coming up in a couple of days. After the game today, so I expect it to be a close scoring series. Boston might win maybe one game by a few goals, but otherwise, I expect each game decided by one or two goals. But as far as the series itself, you look at the guys that they have 1 through 4 on the forecheck and on defense, like I mentioned. Even though they have some guys that are not as experienced as St. Louis on certain lines. St. Louis doesn't have as much experience, so I think that factors in as an advantage for Boston. So it should be pretty interesting, let's put it that way.
Exactly. Do you want to talk about Donovan McNabb, or do you want to save it for next week as we near the end of this show?
Yeah, wherever you want to go, we can get into McNabb, who continues to not get voted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I believe he's been on the ballot now for second consecutive year. A lot of people are pointing out the Dan Marino factor, Donovan McNabb type of guy like Marino who, you know, made some Pro Bowls, was on some teams, some good teams, was on at least one Super Bowl. But Marino accomplished a lot more, and the big thing that both of them are known for is not winning a Super Bowl. But like I mentioned to you prior to the show, obviously people that are comparing McNabb to a guy like Marino who's in the Hall of Fame already, elected in despite not winning a championship behind center. Marino accomplished a lot more individually despite not winning the Lombardi Trophy or an NFL championship. So I really don't hold that over Marino's head as much as I do with McNabb, because McNabb also, you know, arguably lost that 2005 championship game. I'm sorry, the Super Bowl game versus New England. He had three interceptions. He also had a fourth one that was dropped. He had a couple others actually that were on the tip of New England defensive backs' fingers. So McNabb didn't play in that game well at all. It was just looked totally out of it and looked totally lost. So what are your thoughts on McNabb's career as a whole? Obviously played a significant amount of time here. Wasn't really wholly beloved by Eagles fans based on his kind of wacky, weird personality and his outspoken comments and nature. A guy that was drafted second overall in 99 by the Eagles, played here for almost the duration, entire duration of his career, 11 years, 1 year with Washington, 1 year with Minnesota at the tail end of his career, combined only 19 games between those two latter two teams, but the other 140-plus games in his career and 90-plus wins were as an Eagle. So it's an interesting, polarizing Hall of Fame case for McNabb, who was a six-time Pro Bowler and also the first NFL quarterback in history in 04 to throw 30 or more touchdowns and fewer than 10 interceptions. He had 31 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, also a 64 completion percentage in the 04 season that led to the Super Bowl run in the 05 postseason. So some interesting career for McNabb as well as his resume. What are your thoughts on McNabb's resume as well as his career as well as his Hall of Fame case?
I'm with you. I think he's a borderline Hall of Famer. I think being 1-5 in the NFC Championship game and then throwing up in the Super Bowl, it doesn't sit well, at least with me. Last week he compared himself to Troy Aikman. I mean, Troy Aikman won 3 Super Bowls. McNabb went to 1 Super Bowl, and he didn't play well, not nearly as well. T.O. is the reason why we were in that game, I think. I mean, if he had played well, we would have probably won the Super Bowl. But we won that Super Bowl 2 years ago, so I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but
What's interesting is, you know, he's a guy that put up respectable, impressive stats in the regular season. He was the runner-up for NFC MVP to Marshall Faulk of St. Louis in 2000 when the Eagles had that bounce-back season and made the playoffs that year. Like you mentioned, 5 NFC Championship games, 1 Super Bowl, but combined out of the 6 games, he was only 1-5, threw up in the Super Bowl final huddle, denied that he did so, and multiple Eagles players confirmed that McNabb did it. And I also noticed when watching that game that he just looked out of breath and overly sweaty. He just looked lost the whole game and out of shape. And like I mentioned, you know, he had an impressive career behind center. He was always a dual threat to pass and the run. But another thing that people forget, he also threw at guys' feet a lot. He was not for being accurate statistically. Like I mentioned in the 2004 season that culminated in the Super Bowl run and lost to the Patriots, you know, 64% completion percentage that season, which was one of the best rates for an NFC quarterback that year. But he also threw at guys' feet a lot, which is another reason why he had few interceptions. You know, he ran a lot, and he made smart throws when he wasn't in big games, but another reason why he didn't get picked off a huge amount of the time outside of, you know, the tail end and the early part of his career was because he was making, you know, poor throws, either overthrowing guys or undershooting guys, throwing at guys' feet, you know, making, like, poor throws. I mean, I've been watching old games, and even Troy Aikman, when he was an announcer for Fox with Falk and Collinsworth back in the day, even, like, for example, the 2005 Super Bowl, McNabb was just overthrowing guys. It wasn't necessarily the, you know, the footing, but it was just the ball itself and the fact that he was making inaccurate throws. So I think he's a guy that had a very good career, but not a great Hall of Fame career. And I think that's what people will remember him most for when it comes to his eligibility from a quarterback statistical standpoint. So obviously 234 career passing touchdowns, 85.6 passer rating for his career, 2-1 TD-INT ratio, nearly a 60% completion percentage, nearly won 100 games combined as QB with several different teams, Philadelphia, Minnesota, Washington, 5 NFC championship games, 1 Super Bowl, but I just don't think that's enough to really push him, catapult him, I guess the best way to put it, catapult him forward into being a Hall of Fame guy. So, you know, it should be interesting. We'll have some more opportunities down the line. He played well in some of the playoffs and earlier on and later on in his career, but he made a lot of poor decisions outside of the Super Bowl versus New England in 2005, as well as in that game. So that'll probably be, unfortunately, what voters and detractors remember him most for: the bad throws, the 3 interceptions in the Super Bowl, the puking in the Super Bowl, and the never winning the Super Bowl. So even though guys like Marino and Warren Moon never won the Super Bowl, they had more superior stats than McNabb and were more likable too, which is another thing that voters look for.
We're about to be hitting that mark, so you want to do a quick plug and we'll wrap up the show?
Yeah, so it should be interesting coming up. You can catch me on Twitter at Kyle_Lutz @_. You know, tweet us live during the podcast each Monday night. We had to push this one forward from the regularly scheduled 9:30 show. You can reach me on there for comments. Also, upcoming soon, I'm at Rowan University, and you can go online at the Rowan University school newspaper website, the WIT website, and reach me on there as well at my student email through that website. So we'll see what McNabb does down the line with his Hall of Fame eligibility and what happens. It should be a pretty interesting Stanley Cup Finals and NBA Finals.
Yep. Thank you, Kyle.